Dear friends, today is the big day. Everything we learned till today, we learned this, we learned that, very chashuva things. And I must say, it's very enjoyable talking to the olam here. Great brains, clever people, geschmack. But today, Rabbi Yisai, it's the constitution itself. Not just little pratim, which come from one place or another, but we're dealing with the DNA of Chesh HaMishpat. The First Amendment, the Second Amendment. This is the real, real sugya. And it's a sugya which is really relevant to almost any business and trade and discussions and based in. Almost anything you will ever have to do with touches on this great big sugya. And this is the sugya called Dina de Malchusa Dina. Dina Malchusa Dina is a concept written in the Gemara. The Gemara is in Gittin, in Nedarim, in Baba Basra, and clearly tells us that to a certain degree, the Torah recognizes concepts which come about due to the law of the land that has a validity in Jewish law. That concept exists. The question is this very limited? Is it broad? And how broad does this concept go? There's two extremes which are clear. And everything in between is debatable. What's clear are the two extremes. On the one hand, the Gemara says in Gittin Daf Yud, I have a shtar, and the shtar comes from a non-Jewish court. It's signed by two non-Jews. It's recognized by the non-Jewish court. And in this shtar, it says that the non-Jewish court recognizes that these two people who signed are reliable, responsible people. And it says that Reuven borrowed money from me. Says the Gemara, even though a non-Jew signed on a shtar is not really worth anything, Torah doesn't give him an amonus when he signs a shtar. Says the Gemara, yeah, but Dina, the Malchusa Dina, the fact that the court recognizes such a document gives it validity, and when this comes later to a Jewish court, they will obligate him to pay because I have this shtar which comes from a non-Jewish court with non-Jewish edim, which testifies he owes me the money. That's the one extreme. Now we go all the way over to the other extreme, and which is a tshuva in the Rashba. And everyone agrees to this din. That what? Jewish law says that couple gets married, the wife owns whatever she might own, and she died. The Torah says in Parshas Pinchas that in a case like this, the husband inherits his wife's possessions. Yerusha Sabal, that's a clear din in the Torah. And as clear as it is in the Torah, Lahavdil, in many places, or most places, secular law doesn't feel the same. She has her own Yershim from her own family, and the fact that she married this man doesn't entitle him to inherit her Nechas. Says the Rashba, there's nothing to talk about. In a case like this, we will follow, the Beis Din will follow, the Halacha will follow. The correct thing is to follow the Jewish law and ignore the secular law. These two extremes are agreed. And everything else in between is dependent on how exactly to define the limits of when we do and when we do not follow the Dina de Malchusa Dina. This is the crux of the issue which we want to examine today. A good understanding of this starts with why is there this whole concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina? Generally, we find ourselves bound by Tarek Mitzvahs. Whatever's written in the Torah, in Torah, the Torah Shabbat, Torah Shabbat, that's binding in a Jewish court. Dina Malchusa Dina, bunch of goyim dreamt something up. That should have some validity in a Jewish court. What does that mean? Where should that come from? And the sugya of Dina Malchusa Dina appears in three or four Masechtas in Shas. And in each Masechta we find the Rishonim giving us different reasons for why in the world should it be that the Torah recognizes Dina Malchusa Dina. Some Rishonim say Dina Malchusa Dina comes from a sugya that we're familiar with, of Hefka based in Hefka. The Gemara says in Gittin, Hefka based in Hefka, a Jewish court has a right of Hefka based in Hefka. And these Rishonim understand that the sugya of Dina Malchusa Dina is merely an extension, that the Gemara is revealing to us the din of the Hefka based in Hefka is the Gemara in Gittin from a pasuk. Anybody who doesn't listen to the Beis Din take away his money. And the Gemara understands that it doesn't need to be a Jewish Beis Din with rabbis with long white beards. Anybody who is appointed over the Tzibur, whether it's a Jewish Beis Din or a Havdil, a non-Jewish court, will get an authority in the eyes of the Torah of Hefka Beis Din Hefka. That's one understanding of the din of Dina Malchusa Dina. Another understanding is, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Taryag Mitzvahs, true, he gave the Goyim Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. One of those Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach is a mitzvah of Dinim. They are to establish a court and run their monetary matters according to the instructions of the court. Which means that the Torah recognizes and in fact encourages Goyim to set up a system for running money matters. Comes the chiddush of Dina Malchusa Dina, that although mitzvahs dinim is for Bnei Noach, we don't have mitzvahs dinim of the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, we have a Shulchan Aruch HaShemishpat with three volumes of Shulchan Aruch HaShemishpat. Nevertheless, if the Torah told the Goyim to set up a court and a system, a monetary system, that gets validity in the eyes of the Jewish Shulchan Aruch as well. Now, obviously, depending on what the reason and the source of this din of Hefka based in Hefka is now going to result in a question, how far does this go? The Gemara says that a shtar which comes from the non-Jewish court, and they recognize Edim as being reliable people, non-Jewish people, that has validity in Jewish law. Is that because the court has a right of Hefka based in Hefka? And whether money is mine or is not mine, it's immaterial, because the Torah gave the non-Jewish court a right of Hefka based in Hefka. Is that the pshat? Or this is not because of Hefka based in Hefka. It's because we have to recognize that they have a mitzvahs dinim, and mitzvahs dinim, what, as far as their non-Jewish secular court has a right and an obligation of a mitzvahs dinim, we have to recognize that. This is a million-dollar question, and it comes up in ever so many cases and situations. We have no intention of learning everything there is to discuss about Dina Malchusa Dina this afternoon. There are, to best of my knowledge, six forum written dedicated solely to the subject of Dina Malchusa Dina, which gives us a bit of an idea of how wide and broad this great big subject is. But we're going to try and swim a little bit and get a little bit of an understanding of what's going on in this Dina Malchusa Dina. If you take a look in the booklet, we start with page Peites in the booklet, which discusses documents which come from a non-Jewish court. Kolas shtoras ha'oilim ba'arkoiz shel oivdei kechavim, afa b'shechosmeim oivdei kechavim kasherim. The Jewish based in will recognize the validity of a document which grants rights to a particular property because of a rule of Dina de Malchusa Dina. We'll go immediately to the other end of the spectrum, and we'll see a Ramo in Shulchan Aruch. If you don't mind to turn to page Kuf, number 100. And we see a Ramo, where the Ramo says, Hanoisei Isha B'mokim, a person gets married in a country. B'mokim Shadonim B'dinei Goyim, Umeso Ishtoi, and the wife dies. Lo yuchal avi ishtoy shar yishel lo imar her mishpocha can't say kol anoyse ishal das aminigu noyse v'nit nadav v'dine goyim de meisa lo yersho bailoich kedoyim alazeh. You can't say that because the goyim in this country feel that her family will inherit, therefore he got married on that understanding. No. Continues the Ramah. V'leka bazeh mishum dina de malchusa. We also don't grant it to her family because of the rule of Dina Malchusa Dina. Why? So the Lashon of the Ramah says, the loyam rin Dina Malchusa ela bedavar sheyesh bo hanah lemelech oishu letakonas b'nei medina. The Ramah is already giving us some sort of definition. Dina Malchusa Dina only applies in cases where this is something to do with either the melech personally or the running of the entire country. But it doesn't mean that the based in, our based in and our halacha is going to follow in every case the dinim of the goyim. Dim kein, because if that would be true, but kol dina Yisrael, take the whole Shulchan Aruch, throw it out, and start studying law, local law. So there is some sort of definition over here in the Ramah, and there becomes a major question in practical halacha lemaisa. Now, the pages in between that you have over here, you have on page Tzadi, you have an important ram. Page Tzadi base, you'll see at the top of the page is a Rashi. Chutz migitei noshim delaben ekrisis ninu hoyv leshaychi b'teres gitim v'kidushin. Aval, why do we say dina malchusa dina, says Rashi? Aval al hadinim nitzdavu b'nei noach. So Rashi seems to learn over here that the validity of Dina Malchusa Dina is because the Torah gave the mitzvah of Dinim to the Goyim. On page Tzadi Gimel we have a Rashbam in Baba Basra Nefron Dalet discussing the same concept of Dina Malchusa Dina. Says the Rashbam, V'om Hashmuel Dina Malchusa Dina. He doesn't give you the case and he doesn't give you the reason of Rashi. Says the Rashbam, Kol Nitzim Varnon Yos, all tax matters, Umin Hogos, and accepted practice, Shel mishpatei melachim, sheregilim lehanig b'malchusa, whatever is accepted in that country, dinahu. Why? Shekol b'nei ha-malchus, mekablim aleihem miritzoinam, chukei ha-melech u'mishpotav. A new reason. You're living in this country, you live here on sufferance, you live here on the understanding that you toe the line of however the melech runs his kingdom. V'hilkach din gomeru v'ein lemachzi b'omach haveri. That's the reason given in the Rashbam. Turn to the next page and you have a Ritva. And the Ritva looks like he's saying similar to the Ramah that we saw. And we continue with the Gemara in Daf Ayin Dalet. I turn to the next page over here. And the Tshuva Sarajba on page Tzadi Zayin. We go on and on. Now there's a stira in the Ramah. And this stira in the Ramah is a major problem, a big headache, and really what's relevant to us most, l'alocha l'maisa. Because on page Kuf, we saw a Ramah who says that Dina Machus Dina only applies in cases where it's written down l'takonas ha-melech, takonas ha-medina. On the other hand, the Ramah, which you'll see on page Tzadiches and Tzadites, seems to expand the concept of Dina Malchusa Dina to all different cases. What do we do, halacha lemaisa? If you turn to page Kuf Beis and Kuf Gimel, you will see a tshuva of Rav Moshe and a page in Chazon Ish. This is very, very interesting. And Rav Moshe's tshuva, you'll see at the title of the tshuva, a company which went bankrupt. V'kodam echod v'gova, somebody took some of whatever belonged to the company. Shloi kafi dina de malchusa. Local law has a way of dealing with bankrupt companies. And this fellow helped himself to money not according to the dina de malchusa. So Rav Moshe wants to know, I call this fellow to the Beis Din, and the question is, does the Beis Din say, we're going to follow what's written in our Shulchan Aruch? Or is the Beis Din going to say, we're going to follow the Dina de Malchusa in this case? This Rav Moshe discusses the Stira and the Ramah, and has his own interesting definition of when we do and don't say Dina de Malchusa Dina. The Chazon Ish on page Kuf Gimel discusses contract law. And contract law is something which deserves a few minutes of introduction. In the Western world and the world in which we are educated and brought up, a person says something, it's not always binding, but if you draw up a document and both sides, both parties sign on the document, that's the most binding thing that you never bring to a court. The Gemara, however, has a concept called asmachta. Asmachta means that I undertake in a document that I will complete by the following date. I'll finish the job, I'll do the mekach, whatever it might be. And if not, I'll pay you double. And both sides sign, and it's very clear that that's what's written in the document. It says the Gemara in Baba Basra, asmachta loikanya, something far-fetched, and the two sides imagine will probably never happen, even if you wrote that if it happens, you're going to pay some extravagant fee or large sum of money. It's written there. But both sides understand that it doesn't really mean to bind you in a halachic way. An incredible concept, which is written in the Gemara time and again. Asmachta loikanya, something which you really don't think is going to happen, loikanya, even though it's written and even though it's signed. And this is in documents all the way around the world. We're busy with this at all times. And there's always two questions which need to be decided by the Rav. Firstly, what's written in this document, does this constitute an asmachta or not? That's one question. Machlokes, Rambam and Ramban and others, does every sort of knas constitute an asmachta? Or do we say no? Depends, what's it dependent on? If it says in the documentation, if I'm guilty, then I'll pay. If somebody else will delay, then I'll pay. What exactly constitutes an asmachta? If we have time, that's coming. And the next question is that we always find ourselves caught between the Gemara, which says asmachta loikanya, and the local law, which says asmachta kanya. Every court of law will uphold a document, and whatever's written in that document, they will enforce. So the Chazon Ish writes, we'll see on page Kuf Gimel, Nira says the Chazon Ish, the Hanog Lichtoiv Chose, a person who, Hanog, the accepted thing is to write a contract, Ligmara Mekach, to finish off the arrangements of a deal, the Koisun, and they write in the document, She'im Alekeach Chose, if you will pull out between the time of signing and completion, Hakesef Shanosan Mochel, he forfeits his money. And if the moich is going to change his mind in the meantime, yichboil, he will pay double. Says the Chazon Ish, ein b'tnai zeh mamash. This is not valid, and the Beis Din will not enforce it. I, it's written, I, it's signed, says the Chazon Ish, ki di'isim shulchan aruch siman reish zayin. It says in siman reish zayin, a concept called asmachta, and you don't need to pay in a case of asmachta. Says the Chazon Ish, ve'af al gab de mahani midina de malchusa, even though I recognize that secular law would uphold such a document. And we have a Gemara which tells us Dina de Malchus Adina, and we have a Shulchan Aruch which tells us Dina de Malchus Adina, says the Chazon Ish, Mikol Mokem, nevertheless, Kivin Shudin Ben Yisrael L'Chaveroim, since we're dealing with a document between two Yidin, Ein Kan Dina de Malchusa. In this case, we're not bound by the Dina de Malchusa. Why, says the Chazon Ish? The imat oimekein, it's not grayed out, but it's the last line. The imat oimekein, if you would say in this case, dina machusa dina, botla asmachta, the entire din of asmachta of the Gemara would be completely null and void. De la oilom bedinei asmachta kanya. Secular law always recognizes asmachta as being valid, and the Shulchan Aruch says it's not valid. And this would be a case where secular law comes into direct conflict with Jewish law. What is this concept that the Chazon Ish is saying? What he's saying is, Rabbi Zalman explains a very simple thing. Dina de Malchus Adina, we saw from Rashi, is built on the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, B'nei Noach have sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach, and one of them is mitzvahs dinim. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to us Taryag mitzvahs, with all of our dinim of Geneva and Gezela and Shoimrim and everything written in Shulchan Aruch. And he gave to the Goyim, sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach, including dinim. Sometimes things will be just on the gvul between the two. So the Gemara says, Dina de Malchus Adina, you have a document signed by two non-Jews, we'll accept that as being valid in a Jewish court. However, when something is directly in contradiction to Jewish law, the mitzvah of dinim by Bnei Noach can never be more important and override the dinim of Tariq mitzvahs given to the Eden. So something which is decided in the Poskim as being part of the Tariq mitzvahs will always override the dinah de Malchus Adina, which is coming from the Sheva mitzvahs Bnei Noach. So therefore we have to decide in every case, is this a contradiction to the dinim of the Torah? And then the dinim of the Torah override? Is this called a little detail and not called contradictory? And then we will follow the non-Jewish law. This is the way Rabbi Zalman explains and the way the Chazon Ish seems to be learning over here. We have over here Madani Eretz, 2-3 pages from Rabbi Shmuel Zalman Auerbach, and Pisrei Choshen, which is further on the same. And then we have a few pages on Asmachta, which is what... to learn the basics of Asmachta, on page Kuf Yud Dalet and Kuf Tes Vav is where you see this concept of Asmachta, that even though it's signed, but the Halacha, the Gemara, looks at it as not being binding. Then you have, on page Kuf Tes Zayin, the Rambam, who says very clearly that we paskan Asmachta is not koina. Followed by page Kuf Yud Tes, you find the same thing on the Ramban. And then we come to this big question discussed by Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish, when you have a Shulchan Aruch, which says Asmachta is not koina, and therefore whatever was written in that contract is not binding. And we have secular law, which says that whatever is written in the contract is binding, and it gets the backing of the Shulchan Aruch, Dina de Malchus Adina. What do you do when Dina de Malchus Adina and Asmachta are contradictory to one another? So this topic happens to be an Asmachta topic, but the greater topic of Dina Machus Adina is global, and the question applies to 1,001 cases. Rabbi Isai, enjoy the sugya.